Welcome back to this segment of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk with Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation. He has put out a new study on poverty and social welfare in the United States and in other nations. So in a sense, we're going to kind of take the temperature, if you will, of how we're doing in this area. Robert, welcome to the program, and I should say welcome back. It's always a good pleasure to talk with you, sir.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so tell us, how are we doing in the United States? I mean, I'm sure we spend a good fortune to try and reduce poverty, but my goodness, I see all these beggars at the, you know, the exit ramps of I-95. What's going on?
Well, there really are two points here. One is that there are sort of two pieces of conventional wisdom or mythology that are prevalent, particularly among liberals, which are first that the United States has a very small social welfare system compared to other countries, and conservatives kind of buy into that sometimes too. They say, oh, we don't want to have a cradle-to-grave welfare state. Well, I'm sorry, we already have one. And secondly, that's the belief that there is much more extensive and deeper poverty in the U.S. than in other advanced countries. And so part of what I've written about here is taking from a study of three very prominent liberal economists who look at this, and then I've sort of amplified what they found. And the first thing is that when you look at social welfare, by that broadly meaning health care, Social Security, retirement, all the anti-poverty, cash, food, housing, medical care that we provide, as well as education, that the United States really is roughly the same as any other advanced country in what the government spends. But the United States is also different than other advanced countries because we have a lot of private sector spending in those areas. In particular, if you're in Europe, the government is providing health care for everybody, including the upper middle class. In the United States, the government health care is focused on the elderly and the poor for the most part, and the working class and the middle class have health care provided through the private sector, through their employers mainly. And that means that our government health care is more redistributive than it is in Europe, ironically. And also, when we look at retirement, the United States has a lot more private retirement than they do in Europe, where most people rely almost exclusively on the government. And so that system is also larger and somewhat more redistributive, at least the government part of it. And when you take the fact that the U.S. has a combination of private and public provision of these services, whereas in other countries it's predominantly government, and the middle class is predominantly or overwhelmingly dependent on government services and benefits, what you find is that the United States actually is spending a lot more money altogether, and in fact it is actually outspending every single nation except for Norway on a per capita basis, and often is spending almost twice as much as Europeans on these different services. And then we could ask, well, of all that very, very large spending, how much of that is actually going toward poor people?
Mm-hmm.
And that ties us into the question of, well, is there a lot more poverty in the United States than there is elsewhere, as you would generally often hear when you're listening to left-wing or mainstream media? And the answer to that is fairly simple. That whenever someone says that there's much more poverty in the United States than there is, say, in France or Germany or Sweden, what they're doing is they're using a biased comparison. And poverty is usually means that you have an income below certain specified levels. And the way you get these claims that the United States has more poverty is to set the income level in the United States much higher than in other countries. So I like to compare that to the normally when they're doing this, that they expect a U.S. runner to run 125 meters, European runner runs 100 meters, he gets to the finish line first, so he must be faster. No, obviously not. And what you find is if you have a fair uniform standard where everybody is judged by the same measure, that in fact the United States definitely does not have substantially higher poverty than these other advanced countries. And by some, depending on where you set the measure, we actually come in lower, for example, than Sweden in terms of poverty. But the overall situation is fairly similar. And then the final point is that, well, what does it mean to be poor in the United States? We have these stark images. Usually the government just said recently that there were 49 million people living in poverty, and then they have these images of homeless people and things like that. But the government also collects data on these 49 million people that they are saying are poor. And one of the problems is when our government defines and measures poverty, it leaves out all of the welfare state in terms of measuring a person's living conditions. So if you're a poor person according to the government, but you get food stamps, well, the food stamp doesn't count as income. Housing doesn't count as income. The earned income tax credit, which is worth $7,500 a year, cash doesn't count as income. And so we say, oh, these people have very low incomes because the entire welfare state is not counted. And when you then look at, well, what does it mean to be poor according to these government standards? And what you find is that about 75% of poor people own a car. Many of them have two cars. The same number, 80% or so, have air conditioning. Two-thirds of them have cable or satellite television. Half of them have computers. 40% have the internet. A similar number have widescreen HD TVs. And these numbers are a little bit out of date, so it's probably much more than that now. The USDA measures their food consumption. Only 4% of poor children were hungry for even a single day during the previous year, according to that data. When you ask poor people, were you able to get medical care whenever you needed it? The overwhelming majority said yes, because even if they don't have insurance, they can go to clinics or to emergency rooms and get health care when they need it. So, in fact, the overwhelming majority of people that the government identifies as poor are not living in any condition that any normal person would recognize as poverty. The housing is very good. In fact, poor Americans actually have substantially larger houses and apartments than the average European, not a poor European, but the average European. Oh, close to 40% or over 40% of all poor people actually own their own homes, which is typically a three-bedroom house with 1.5 baths. It's in good repair. I'm certainly not suggesting that these people are living on Easy Street, that they're living in the lap of luxury. Many of them do struggle to make ends meet every month, but they're generally struggling to pay for their house or apartment, their car, their air conditioning, their satellite TV bill, as well as for their internet service, as well as put food on the table. I'd love for them to have more income and have that be easier, all of those things. But the images of stark deprivation and the claims that this is much more widespread in the U.S. than any place else among developed nations are simply erroneous and false, and that false information makes it difficult for us to devise really rational policies to have a better welfare state.
All right, let me hone in on something you said. You said that, as you understand it, or as I understood what you said, 4% of the 49 million that are getting food stamps, 4% claimed that they went at least once without food or something to that effect. Can you explain?
It's actually even more moderate than
okay,
that.
Okay, go ahead.
Of all the poor people, of all the children that the government identifies as poor, which is I think 15 or 20% of all children, when the USDA asks their parents, look, was this child hungry, not without food, but just hungry for even a single day last year? They say, no, child was not hungry for a single day. If you do the same thing with adults, 4 out of 5 adults who were poor will say, I was not hungry for even a day, not even for, you know, a part of a day at any point during the year. Some of them The others did have some food constraints and things, but they're certainly not malnourished. They didn't go a whole day without eating and things like that. So we have a very ample food supply for poor people.
All right, let me reword the question this way. What percentage of the total, what percentage of the total of Americans would claim that even for one day they wanted to eat but were not able to, you know, do so? Would that be less than 1%?
Maybe less than 1% of children and maybe 2 or 3% of adults.
Okay.
Moreover, those people have certain behavioral factors that contribute to their food shortages. The adults tend to be very heavy smokers, spending a lot of money on cigarettes each month. They also don't necessarily eat food frugally. A third of their total food consumption is in fast food restaurants and things like that. So, you know, those are problems where just giving more money isn't necessarily the best solution to that.
Right. And one criticism of the welfare state overall is that in some ways it really hurts the family, and the family is the ultimate key to social mobility. So in the long run, it's almost like these social welfare programs just create more dependence upon the government.
Right.
And less people who are self-sufficient and who, therefore, will prosper in the long run.
Unfortunately, they do that. And it's almost like welfare does, in fact, generate a need for more welfare. The key factor is that when Lyndon Johnson launched the war on poverty 50 years ago, back in 1964, only about 7% of children in the United States were born outside of marriage. Today, that number is 42%. Ooh. And the women that have children without being married are invariably those with a high school degree or less, those who have obviously the least capacity for supporting those children without general assistance. And that's not only creates a need for government spending, but it also has all kinds of negative side effects for the kids, because they don't have a father in the home. It's not that we don't want to support people who need assistance. Even those people who need assistance because their behavior is somewhat self-defeating, I don't have any problem with assisting those people either. But we do want to have this assistance done in a way that helps people to move toward being better able to support themselves and being able to live more productive, more rewarding lives in our society. And the welfare system clearly does the opposite of that. It undermines people's capacity for self-support, sort of pushes them toward the social margin, and has other negative effects. A successful marriage is, by psychology standards, is probably one of the most important factors of human happiness. But in the last 50 years, in low-income communities, those marriages have all but disappeared. There's a huge cost to that, and part of that erosion of marriage is driven by the welfare state itself.
So, in other words, if dad stays at home, mom will get less money, and so there's an incentive, really, for a breakdown of the family, and there's an incentive even for mom to have more kids, regardless who the father is, and then all this does is just bring children up in a disadvantaged state, and it's just a human tragedy, really.
I don't think that very many women have more kids in order to get more welfare, but it is true that the welfare state, in a sense, makes the dad less financially necessary, and it also, all of these programs do penalize the couple when they get married, because if they're married, then dad's income and earnings are counted toward welfare eligibility, so mom could lose $10,000, $12,000 in welfare benefits if she gets married. That's a really perverse incentive system.
Yeah.
And we've driven the dads right out of the home, which is to everyone's disadvantage. And again, people will say, well, these are no good dads. And so this is 40% of the U.S. population now. Among blacks, it's about 70% of their population. Mm. And to say, well, these men, you know, we don't need those men, it's a terrible thing to say, and it's dramatically untrue, and it's a trend that we really need to learn to reverse rather than make it worse.
Robert Rector, Heritage Foundation, where can people read your report on poverty and social welfare comparing the United States and other nations?
They can find it right on the front page at heritage.org.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us. All the best. And if you can hold on for 2 seconds.